It's time for the Your Personal Bank Show with Ferenc Stoth. In an era of chaos, confusion, and craziness, Ferenc is a voice for common sense. As a financial literacy educator, speaker, and entrepreneur, Ferenc cuts through the noise to help us understand how current events affect our money, economy, and our freedom. Now, here's Ferenc Stoth.
Welcome to the Your Personal Bank Show. This is Ferenc. If you want to reach me, you can do so at yourpersonalbank.com. Yes, you will reach me. Again, it's yourpersonalbank.com. I found a very interesting article here from Markets Insider, and it's discussing five charts that show the stock market valuations are stretched to historical extremes. This is going to be a bit of a theme on the show today, where I'm going to share some reasons behind this and some thoughts about what is happening and why. Now, first of all, this article has stated that the S&P 500 has surged 27% this year to date, 2024, and hitting over 50 record closing highs. They cite Fed rate cuts, strong earnings, and a Trump win have fueled the stock market rally. Yet, research has shown that these five charts show the stock market is trading near extreme valuations. And these are important charts because many very big investors, including the Federal Reserve, watch these charts closely. One of the points they state here, though, is we would not like to see valuations continue to go higher that could cause a traumatic downside in the future. And here's the five charts. The first one is the trailing price to earnings ratio. This is a trailing 12-month price PE ratio. Many of you have heard of the price earnings ratio or the PE ratio. This is a little bit better measuring because it tracks the previous 12 months and averages it out. So it shows a better idea, takes out the blips, so to speak, of the PE or the price to earnings ratio. And of course, PE ratio is a very big component of evaluation of a stock of whether it's expensive or not so expensive. And the reality is the 12-month price to earnings ratio has now surged over to 27. In fact, the only times since 1940 that the trailing 12-month PE ratio has been higher was before each previous recession, which in fact, this happened in 2000, 2008, and 2020. Shortly thereafter, we had a severe pullback or correction in the stock market. The second one that's quite famous is called the Buffett ratio. Warren Buffett kind of popularized this one, and I've discussed this on a show quite a few times. And this measures the total value of U.S. stocks compared to GDP. This valuation rose to an all-time record of 3 times. This valuation rose near its all-time high of 3 times, which means the value of stocks is 3 times the gross domestic product of the United States. Buffett himself has stated that when the ratio rises above 2 times, he suggests the stock market is overvalued. According to Warren Buffett's own words, the stock market is 50% over that point, or 50% overvalued from his perspective. The third chart is called the forward price to earnings. This is the forward PE ratio. The previous one we discussed was the 12-month trailing. This is the one that, based on forward-looking analyst estimates for corporate earnings. So this one looks forward. And the forward PE ratio is now nearing its all-time highs ever recorded. In fact, it's currently over 22. The all-time record was 25, which was during the peak reached during the dot-com bubble in 1999. The fourth chart, which I find very interesting because this is called the Fed model. This is one that the Federal Reserve looks at quite closely. They have a stock market valuation that compares the forward earnings yield to the S&P of the S&P 500 to the 10-year Treasury. Now, why this is so important is when Treasury bonds, interest rates that Treasury bonds pay goes up, people are less likely to invest in stocks because bonds are considered they're backed by the U.S. government, they're considered a safer investment than stocks. And when you can get a similar expected return in bonds as stocks, why take on the additional risk? And many large institutional investors follow this, including the Federal Reserve. Well, the yield on the 10-year Treasury, the model now in looking at forward earnings yield is about 4.5%, which is about identical to the current 10-year Treasury bond yield. In other words, this model is predicting that the average return in the stock market will be about 4.5% looking forward, while at the same time, you could buy your 10-year Treasury and earn the same amount. So this is a very valuable one to pay attention to, especially if you want to understand what the Federal Reserve is doing and why. So all of these charts, the bottom line is, as they stated, all of these charts are stretched to historical highs, at or near historical highs. Another key thing to understand is something called the U.S. money supply. And it has done something not observed literally since the Great Depression. Now, what is the money supply? There's two money supplies. There's M1 and M2. M1 is a measurement of the amount of money that's in cash, coins in circulation, traveler's checks, and demand deposits from checking accounts. So in other words, money that's easily accessible and pretty much instantly. That's the M1 supply. The M2 supply includes all of those things, plus money market accounts, savings accounts, and CDs below $100,000. And this is money that consumers do have access to and can spend, but requires a little bit more effort. The M2 supply is watched closely by the Federal Reserve and Wall Street, because for 90 years straight, literally since the Great Depression, the M2 money supply has steadily increased. Well, there's only been 5 times that the money supply has decreased by 2% or more since 1870. Each of these times it has done so, we have had a significant recession following that. The last one, of course, was the Great Depression. Now, to be fair, the M2 money supply did increase to an all-time high during the height of the COVID relief the funds that were helicoptered into the system by the government. The money supply actually increased in a year by 26%. That's how much more money the government, as I stated earlier, helicoptered into the system. It was an all-time record. It has contracted from that point to actually negative 2%, which is below the levels, the amount of money in the system is less than it was even before COVID. We have not seen a reduction of the money supply, the M2 money supply, like I said, since the Great Depression. This is why it feels like it requires more money to buy things. The reality is it does. Inflation is part of the factor of this, and so is the quantitative tightening that the Federal Reserve has been doing, which is nothing more than they've been selling assets from their balance sheet steadily and then taking that money out of circulation, therefore reducing the total amount of money in supply. It's basic supply and demand. If you have more of something, if you have more money in the system, things are going to cost more overall. If you have less money in the system, you have less money chasing those items. So you would think naturally that things would cost less. Of course, we're not seeing that happen yet. These are all forerunners of what economically likely will happen. And that's why this article from Motley Fool states the stock market is doing something it's never done before, and investors could be playing with fire, according to Warren Buffett. Again, the S&P 500 is at or near all-time highs, with a second consecutive year 20% plus gains. That rarely ever happens. In fact, anyone familiar with history remembers the dot-com bubble, and then after it burst, and Warren Buffett himself in 1999 famously made a speech discussing this very thing about the Buffett indicator. As I stated earlier, the ratio of the market value of all publicly traded stocks to GDP. He stated himself, it's probably the single best measure of where valuations stand at any given moment. In other words, he's stating if price of stocks are expensive or not. He pointed out how the historical trend of this metric going back to 1924. And the message of the chart, as he stated, is, Warren Buffett, that is, if the percentage relationship falls to the 70 or 80% area, buying stocks is likely going to work out well for you. And if the ratio approaches 200%, as it did in 1999 and 2000, you're playing with fire. Well, not only is the Buffett indicator at 200%, it's actually above that. So therefore, as Warren Buffett has warned, investors are playing with fire. In fact, now not only is the indicator above 200%, it's actually now over 300%, 325% according to the latest. This is a historical all-time high. Now, Warren Buffett himself has had a lot of concern about the valuation of stocks, and although he has not said much recently publicly, his actions have. He has sold more stock in the last 8 quarters than at any point in his career and has a bigger cash pile, both percentage-wise and total dollars, than at any point in his career previously. What is my point I'm trying to say from all this type of stuff? Nearly every indicator, every historical norm is pointing to the same thing. And it's not rocket science. The stock market is overvalued by a long shot, historically so. What should you do? If you've been a part of this, congratulations. You've made tremendous gains, tremendous increases. What should you do? The wise investor, even Warren Buffett himself, has stated and doing, you take some of those winnings off the table. You protect those assets. It's human nature. It's when you've been winning for a while, it's difficult to change. Greed and fear are real emotions. But buy low, sell high is appropriate. And as Warren Buffett famously states consistently, be fearful when others are greedy. Take some of the winnings off the table. Protect them. Insure. Guarantee. Annuities, cash value life insurance can be great tools for that, depending on whether you want tax-free, high liquidity or not, those types of things. But by protecting some of your gains, you can actually lock in those gains. They're not just paper gains if and when the markets do correct and potentially correct severely. If you want more information on this, contact me at yourpersonalbank.com. Stay tuned in the next segment. I got a few more things on this and some thoughts that I think you'll find very interesting about maybe some of the reasons why. This is Ference, host of the Your Personal Bank Show. My show focuses on creating tax-free buckets of money, insured, guaranteed, highly liquid, and the ability to create positive arbitrage. Did you know this is the best time in over 40 years to invest in index annuities? An index annuity allows you to, one, grow your money safely without market risk. Once gains are locked in, they're guaranteed against future market loss. Two, double-digit potential upside on good market years with no losses in bad years. Principal is guaranteed. Three, a 7-8% fixed interest option is available in the first year. If you're interested in growing your money with potential index-related gains without downside market risk, this is the best time in over 40 years to consider an annuity. If your annuity is over 2 years old, the newer products likely have far superior potential returns. Please contact me at yourpersonalbank.com or 866-268-4422 for more info. That's yourpersonalbank.com.
Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show with Ference Toth. Want more information? Contact Ference at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. That's 866-268-4422. Now back to the show with Ference Toth.
Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show. This is Ference. If you want to contact me, you can do so at yourpersonalbank.com. Yes, you will reach me. Again, it's yourpersonalbank.com. Couple of other thoughts. If you missed the first segment, I'm encourage you to go to the website or our app, yourpersonalbank.com, or the Your Personal Bank app. And I discussed a number of the charts and indicators and things like that that are nearly all pointing out to historical, extreme high levels of valuations in the markets. I'm going to get to some of the reasons I think why, but I got a couple other quick thoughts here. This Fortune article I thought is very interesting where it states, AI optimists are behaving like the investors who got burned in the Great Depression and dot-com bubble. This is according to Vanguard's chief economist. And why he's saying that is the stock market could be too strong for its own good. This is according to this Inc. magazine article. As it states, investors either don't see risks or don't care about them. As this article continues to point out, I find this very valuable because this starts getting into some of the thought processes why. As it states, investors are piling into the stock market like it's 1999, 2009, or 2021. If you remember, all of those years were very, very strong up years, and the following years were the opposite. As this article continues to state, uninterrupted momentum suggests a nonchalance about looming risks. And some market watchers are pointing out some of these risks, and they even state there seems to be a growing chorus that stock market returns will continue. But as they point out, some of the biggest risks likely are investors' enthusiasm and willingness to take risk might be at some of the most unprecedented levels we've seen, except for a few exceptions, like those particular years right before a major correction. And as they state here, exuberance may present a bigger threat than anything in the political realm. Those of you old enough to remember 1999 and 2000, the dot-com bubble, and then the later burst. The peak was in March of 2000. I remember I was in the financial business. I was doing what I do now, protecting people's assets, putting them in assets that were guaranteed, insured, tax-favored, all that kind of stuff. And the markets from that point dropped from the top to the bottom over the next couple of years about 45%. Many, many experts, economists, analysts from Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, BlackRock, have all stated that this current market reminds them it's eerily similar to the dot-com bubble. For many reasons, it was a tech-focused rally, which is what we're seeing here. It got narrowed into a few stocks, which we're seeing here, very concentrated growth. And it seemed like the train would never stop. In fact, I remember seeing articles back then stating that the stock market would never go down again because of the dot-com. I'm seeing some of those same kind of things today because of the excuse now, or the reason, is AI. I also remember the current Fed chair, I believe was Ben Bernanke at that time, coming out with the term irrational exuberance. I see that same statement here in this Inc. magazine, stating that exuberance may present a bigger threat than anything else. Now, I don't know for sure what's causing this high level of exuberance. Certainly, as they state, the AI bandwagon, the optimists behind AI changing the world are behind this exuberance in the stock market, much like they were with the dot-com. Now, did the internet change the world? Absolutely. But did it change it in 1999 or 2000? No. The changes that came about really came about quite a few years later. It was quite some time before the internet and all the technological advances that result from the internet, widespread use of it, that is, before it really became a factor in the business world and profitability and all those types of things. AI may happen faster than the dot-com revolution did, the internet revolution. But likely it's going to take longer than the optimistic, enthusiastic people or irrational exuberance that we see right now. And as Mark Twain always was famous for saying, that history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. You see, the exuberance, the source of all this excitement, is coming from the same place, Silicon Valley. And I'm not saying they shouldn't have reason for being excited about the future. My gosh, I am too. But you have a lot of young tech, wild-eyed entrepreneurs, many who make promises that are unrealistic, and they're doing so they can raise funds for their startups and their businesses and all those types of things. And that exuberance, that excitement can become contagious, and people can get caught up in it. And that's what all these articles are stating, these charts are stating. And like I said, those of us that have been around a little while will remember very, very eerily similar experience that we saw in the dot-com bubble, and then later, of course, it burst. Will it happen again? There's no guarantee either way. But if you look at history, throughout human history, each and every time we've had a bubble like this, a strong, significant run-up, exuberance like this, the bubble has burst. Reality comes into play. People start to get disillusioned. And then it's sort of a domino effect. And unfortunately, the stock market is also famous for another thing, and that is stocks tend to go up like an escalator, but down like an elevator. My point is simple, but I am seeing more and more negative or warning articles about the stock market. And after a while, it just becomes a self-proclaiming prophecy. It comes to effect. You see, the price of a stock, or any asset for that matter, is really the willingness of what another person is willing to pay for it. Like that game of musical chairs, you don't want to be left the last one standing without a chair to sit in. I've stated in the last segment and previous shows, Warren Buffett showing by his actions that he believes the markets to be very much overvalued and has been selling stocks at a record rate, unlike at any point in his career. We're seeing overextension of valuations, even by his own indicator, at levels we've never seen in history. The risk is elevated. Am I saying to get out of the stock market completely? No, not necessarily. Am I saying reduce your risk, protect yourself, take some of the winnings off the table? Absolutely. If you've been involved with this and enjoyed the run-up, congratulations, you won. It's almost like you won the lottery, so to speak. You put the chips on the table and it kept growing and growing and growing. And one of the hardest things to do when you start getting excited, exuberance, as this article states, is to use some logic and some common sense and step back and say, you know, it might make sense to pull some of these winnings off the table. Because certainly, as much as it's gone up, it could quite just as easily do this opposite and go back down. That's what I'm trying to bring to the table, and another voice, a voice of reason, really, to try to help people separate the emotions from your decision making. Use some facts and some logic and some history. Now, I have no idea whether this is the case or not, but I have a suspicion. And I'm going to pull the veil back a little bit. I rarely share my thought process with people on this show. I usually take some time to think about things, analyze it, do some research, use some practical experience, and try to put in a healthy dose of common sense to come up with the conclusions of why things are the way they are. I'm going to freely state I'm speculating on this one, but I'm having an increasing gut feeling that there may be something to this. And the reason I'm bringing it up is I don't know that if there's going to be any way of really proving this point before it actually happens. Since Trump won the election, things have been surprisingly quiet. It's no secret that many of the elites, financial elites, are no fans of Trump. Larry Fink, CEO of BlackRock, for example, they hold more assets than any other institution in the world, is no fan of Donald Trump. Some people thought that the stock market should have had some kind of correction even prior to the election, but for political reasons, perhaps, the markets were prevented from going down too much. I don't know. No way to prove that. But certainly, there's many out there that believe that to be true. Is there some collusion or agreement or unspoken agreement even to continue to allow the markets to go up despite every risk? Again, like this Inc. article states, investors either don't see risks or don't care about them. Why don't investors care about the risks that are clearly there and in extreme valuations on the high end, historically so? Is it, could it be, because they want to continue to see the market go up until Trump takes office and then see a correction, a recession, or a crash even, so that they can then blame it on his watch? I don't know. Politically speaking, it could make sense, some sense for the future, for future election cycles. They can blame Trump for this. And again, in the establishment arenas, in the bi-coastal elites, in the corporate boardrooms. It's no secret that there's many, many CEOs and billionaires that do not like Trump. In fact, many who hate him with a passion. Could there be some incentive on their part to do something like that or influence it in some way? Or is it all just the irrational exuberance and people are just so excited they can't, like Inc. magazine says, they can't see the risks or don't care about them? That certainly has happened in previous times. Again, prior to the dot-com bubble, we saw that. The Roaring Twenties run up before the Great Depression. That happened then. Again, I'm speculating. But does the potential exist that that is the case? And if so, Trump will be taking office here in just a few weeks. If there's something to this hunch that I have that's increasingly growing stronger, if it turns out to be some truth to it, could the correction start some point after Trump takes office? If so, why not protect yourself from it? As I stated before and many times before, take some of the winnings off the table. Lock in the money. Make sure it's insured, guaranteed, tax-free even, highly liquid. Why is that so beneficial? Well, if it's highly liquid and a correction does occur, could you then rebuy into the markets and buy the stocks cheap when they're cheap now again? And the answer is absolutely you could, yet still make some money on it while you're waiting, because how long will it take? Typical cycles, top to bottom. The last two cycles took, 08, 09 took about 18 months. The dot-com bubble to crash, top to bottom, took about 2 years. Do you want to sit on the sidelines in cash and lose money every year due to inflation, or would you at least like to make some money on it? For most people, 6% tax-free would be equivalent to 7 to 9% after tax. Not a bad return. Most people were happy with that. And then, when it seems like the worst has gotten behind us and things start getting better again, which will happen after a correction, you could re-engage. If you want more information on this, contact me at yourpersonalbank.com. Stay tuned in the next segment. I got some more great information we're going to discuss about real estate, because that's just a whole nother animal.
I'm Ference Toth, host of the Your Personal Bank Show. I'm excited to announce a special event with John Burley, Saturday, January 18th in Phoenix, sponsored by Money Radio. John, what are you be sharing?
We're going to be covering from my book, Money Secrets of the Rich, the 7 levels of investors, so you can clearly identify where you're at and what you need to do to move forward with your money. We're also going to cover the 7 money steps of the rich, including the automatic money system. And then we're going to finish up with how to safely and securely make far more money than the stock market in real estate.
And I will share how to grow your money insured, guaranteed, tax-free, and highly liquid, and how to gain positive cash flow on your money. Your personal bank can enhance personal finances, business investments, and real estate investing.
So don't miss this unique opportunity to not only learn, but meet other successful investors.
Register at yourpersonalbank.com. Join us January 18th. Space is extremely limited.
Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show with Ference Toth. Want more information? Contact Ference at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. That's 866-268-4422. Now back to the show with Ference Toth.
Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show. This is Ference. If you want to reach me, you can do so at yourpersonalbank.com. Yes, you'll reach me at yourpersonalbank.com. So the first two segments, we were discussing a lot about the stock market, the historical highs that it's at, from just about every measurement, and however way you want to measure it, every chart, or at a historical extreme highs. And the risk of a pullback are much greater than they were, well, at any other time at this point. We'll see what happens. If you missed it, go to yourpersonalbank.com. You can listen to this or any of the previously recorded shows anytime you like, or you can go to the Your Personal Bank app and do that. Now, real estate's a different story. I've got an article here, for example. There's local housing markets that are certainly shifting. Again, it has to do with the inventory. I had somebody discussing this, a client of mine, just today, who's a big real estate investor, and they were asking me some questions regarding this. And likely the biggest factor in terms of whether the real estate values are still staying strong or are weakening is really has to do with inventory. So there's a number of markets in the Southwest and the Southeast that are weakening, while the Midwest, Northeast, and Southern California remain tight, largely because of inventory. They were going through the list of the 200 largest metro areas, and it's really quite simple. It's a very large range. You've got inventories that'll range as high as from pre-pandemic levels, places like Huntsville, Alabama, that actually have 85% more inventory available than they did pre-pandemic. And you have other places like in Connecticut where they have 75% less inventory than pre-pandemic. That is a massive swing difference in terms of how much inventory of properties are actually available. And it's basic economics 101, supply and demand. So what's happening is with real estate is there is a huge bifurcation, a bifurcated market going on. And it really depends on what region or metro area you're located in terms of whether there's a large inventory or a small inventory. Of course, when there's a large inventory, prices tend to go down, which we're seeing particularly in places like Florida and Texas and other areas where it's the opposite, like the Northeast in particular, Midwest. In fact, I was discussing with another client in Texas who are also involved in real estate, and they are in Waco. They're involved in the markets in Dallas, Waco, and Austin. And the differences were dramatic. Austin being one of those areas where the prices are dropping, as they stated, more than any other because, one, the prices went up there more than anywhere else in that area. And so the inventory has increased significantly. Another point here on this other article is pointing out that inventory of new single-family houses has jumped to its highest level since 2007. In fact, unsold spec houses have jumped to their highest level since 2009 as sales are plunging. Home builders are likely going to have to do some serious price cutting to move their inventory. And this is really important. In fact, they're some of the highest levels we've seen. Again, it varies in different regions, but some of the highest levels we've seen of new home, single family homes for sale, even since the all-time high back in 2006. Now, spec homes are really important because a spec home is where a home builder builds a house and they don't actually have a buyer for it yet. So they put all the money up, and once it's completed, they don't get the money out back out until it's sold. So they're highly motivated to sell that house to release the funds to be able to then go build the next house. So the fact that in some areas we now have some of the highest levels of new single-family homes for sale and a lot of spec homes supply, the reality is the price of real estate in those areas, particularly for new homes, is likely going to decline further because of the excess supply. And of course, there will be spillover effects on that with existing homes. If prices of new homes are going down in particular metro area, the homes that are for sale that are existing homes are also going to be affected, because why would you pay more for an older home, when you can pay the same amount, or potentially less even, for a new home? So I think we're going to see some real significant changes in the housing market, again, very bifurcated depending on region, in the near future. Also, when you talk about commercial real estate, because you always have to kind of separate that part of it out, new office vacancies has now spiked to the highest levels we've seen, even worse than what we saw in the worst of the financial crisis, you know, in the 2008-2009 period. Office delinquency rates are now over 10%, which is the highest levels we've ever seen on record. Commercial real estate that's getting affected the worst is older office buildings. They're just getting hammered. Because again, you have a high vacancy rate because a lot of still work from home. A lot of people never went back to the office or doing so part-time. Companies don't need as much office space. Also, if you go back a few years, office space was actually in demand. It was a shortage. So many companies were leasing more space than they needed, anticipating they were going to grow into that space. Well, now the opposite is true. So commercial office real estate, particularly older office buildings, We're seeing in some parts of the country, these buildings selling for literally the value of the land. In other words, the building's worth nothing. We haven't seen anything like this for quite some time. The commercial office space is truly in a depression. Now, again, that's bifurcated also because while office space is hurting, retail space is hurting, high vacancy rates, warehouse space actually is doing quite well. Those big warehouses we see, Amazon and others, are doing quite well, and they're building new ones even. Commercial office space and retail space is the areas that are really hurting. So if you're looking at investments and things, one of those common sayings are don't catch a falling knife. Certainly there's some deals in that area, but it's hard to say if the worst is over yet, and you just don't want to catch a falling knife, if you know what I'm trying to say. You know, gold's been on a tear. It's gone up about 30%, which is a big move for gold. But if you look at it throughout history, that's a big move for gold, but also stay, you know, flat for years and not go anywhere. So again, if you've done really good in the precious metals markets, could it make sense to take some of the winnings off the table? And I think the answer is yes, because one of the reasons why precious metals, gold in particular, have gone up so much is due to inflation, government overspending, weakening of the dollar. We're going to have a new administration soon. And if Elon Musk is successful and Trump in reducing government spending and things like that, we could likely see a situation where gold prices are lower at the end of Trump's term than they were when he started. That's certainly quite possible. So I've had a number of people ask me, well, I've done really well in gold or silver and these various precious metals. Should I sell some of it now? I think it's not a bad idea. Again, because of the changing priorities, economy and things like that, that likely are going to happen due to the new administration. Now, here's the other point to understand. The Trump administration and budget will not really take effect probably until late 2025, because we're still under the Biden administration. Still, the government's still spending far more than it receives. And that will continue likely for the next roughly year. So yes, as far as many people being excited, and rightly so, for the change that's coming, I am among those. Please understand, it will take at least a year, likely, for the effects, for the change to actually take effect, perhaps two even. So I'd say next year or two, we are certainly likely going to see a lot of volatility, a lot of uncertainty, a lot of change. And then the longer term run, yes, I'm very optimistic about the longer term future, much more so now than I was before. I would be more optimistic about real estate, for example, or precious metals, or the stock market for that matter, if they weren't at or near all-time highs, which they all are. After a correction, frankly, I'd be far more optimistic and bullish about all of those markets. So if you were in them, great. You took it, you got to ride the ride up. Congratulations. Is that going to continue? Well, as far as the stock market goes, that's why the analysts from Goldman Sachs, BlackRock, and JP Morgan all echoed the same thing, predicting the stock market is likely only going to average 3 to 5% over the next 10 years. So 3 to 5% return over the next decade. That's their prediction. Well, if you can get 6 to 7% insured, guaranteed, tax-free, like I've got annuities paying over 7% guaranteed, close to 8% now. Well, if you can get that guaranteed and insured, some of it even tax-free, highly liquid, why wouldn't you consider that, at least for part of your portfolio? In fact, all of these analysts are echoing the same thing, where they're stating they predict this decade will be the golden age of fixed investments. Because of the strong run-up in the markets, both real estate, stock, precious metals, the higher bond interest rates due to all the government debt. Again, even if the Trump administration and Elon Musk do everything right from a financial standpoint and get government spending down, even start paying down the debt even, you don't pay off $36 trillion of debt overnight. Think of this as like a big oil tanker sailing in the ocean, turn the ship's steering wheel. Well, that ship's not going to turn on a dime. It will turn, but it takes time. And if we go back to an historical example of Carter to Reagan transition, where we had high interest rates, etc., a really rough economy, If you look back in history, it took about 2 years for the Reagan economy to start truly taking effect. And certainly the 1980s were a strong decade after that. But it took a couple years for that to turn around, folks. And as optimistic as many people are, including myself, of the future, please understand, we're not out of the woods yet. That's the point I'm trying to make. And there could be a lot of volatility in the meantime, in the next year or two. And we certainly could see some significant or even severe corrections, even recessions, before we get back to a better financial footing, less debt, all that kind of stuff. The problems weren't caused overnight. They won't be resolved overnight. A lot can be done to put us in the right direction, certainly. Very excited about that. But the effects of it will take time. So although I believe being optimistic about it, the future is justified, I am. Having some cautious optimism right now, I think, is warranted. Being balanced, logical, divorce some of your emotions from your decision-making is how you win through uncertain and volatile times. Emotions, fear, and greed kill you, folks, when it comes to assets that have risk. So again, I implore you, I encourage you to at least consider taking some of the winnings off the table. Protect some of your portfolio. Guarantee it. Insure it tax-free. And frankly, in the next decade, likely these assets will outperform even the stock market or real estate market or precious metals for that matter. And wouldn't it be ironic if you heard this message and then looked back on it a few years and say, gosh, I wish I would have. But right now you can. You can take advantage of these opportunities and likely will not regret it. Stay tuned in the last segment. I got some things about government spending that I believe will open your eyes. This is Ferentz, host of the Your Personal Bank Show. My show focuses on creating tax-free buckets of money, insured, guaranteed, highly liquid, and the ability to create positive arbitrage. Did you know this is the best time in over 40 years to invest in index annuities? An index annuity allows you to, one, grow your money safely without market risk. Once gains are locked in, they're guaranteed against future market loss. Two, double-digit potential upside on good market years with no losses in bad years. Principal is guaranteed. Three, a 7-8% fixed interest option is available in the first year. If you're interested in growing your money with potential index-related gains without downside market risk, this is the best time in over 40 years to consider an annuity. If your annuity is over 2 years old, the newer products likely have far superior potential returns. Please contact me at yourpersonalbank.com or 866-268-4422 for more info. That's yourpersonalbank.com.
Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show with Ferentz Toth. Want more information? Contact Ferentz at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. That's 866-268-4422. Now back to the show with Ferentz Toth.
Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show. This is Ferentz. You can reach me at yourpersonalbank.com. Yes, you will reach me. Again, it's yourpersonalbank.com. So I found this quite interesting. This points out some of the bloated government that we have today. In fact, if you go back to 1950, the pages that were in the total code of all the federal regulations for the entire country were less than 10,000 pages. That was every law on the books. Today, it's over 186,000 pages. So we've got, and it's just steadily gone up nearly every single year. So literally the number of laws in the books have gone for, like I said, less than 10,000 pages to over 186,000 pages. I don't even know what kind of percentage of increase that is, but that is absolutely incredible. And for fiscal year 2024, for example, U.S. Congress provided over $500 billion to programs whose authorizations had already expired under federal law. And over $300 billion of that expired over a decade ago. In other words, the funding was authorized over a decade ago. It had expired by law, yet they continue to spend the money. This is what's referred to as bloat and waste. This is not what our founding fathers had in mind. And to dive into this a little further, even the tax complexity. So from 1950 to now, we've gone from 15,000 to over 75,000 pages of tax code alone. People wonder why it's difficult to understand all the taxes. The American people are overtaxed. We work, invest, spend, give, die in Social Security, and worst of all, the money is wasted, and then the government prints on top of it. Well, if you can print money, why do you need to tax us? And I think I'm seeing that sentiment becoming more and more common. In fact, if we look at fiscal year, the last fiscal year, 2023, the total amount of revenue brought in by the federal government was about $4.5 trillion. Yet they spent $6.1 trillion. This is everything. This is according to the Office of Budget Management. The last budget that we had that was balanced, in other words, the federal government spent the same or less amount of money that it brought in, was in 2001. So this isn't political parties. This goes to both parties. This is a problem that I'm excited about may actually start to be addressed, thanks to some of the focus of the Trump administration and Elon Musk and Vivek with their Department of Government Efficiency. The average American pays about 30% of their income in federal income tax. Most states require you to pay some upwards of 10%. Most sales taxes around 7% or more. Property taxes average about 8% of the average American's income. So therefore, over half of your check or your income is taken from you before you even get home from work. And they give away a lot of money to other countries. Again, it starts to make you wonder, why do they need to tax us if they're just going to do all this, either give it away or waste it? And to make it more frustrating, the federal government currently employs thousands of IRS agents who have tax issues of their own. Current IRS agents owe over $1.5 billion of unpaid back taxes. But it gets worse. The Pentagon can't account for $825 billion. The Pentagon, in fact, has failed its seventh audit in a row. For 7 years in a row, it can't account for its funding. Try running your business or your household that way. This gives you an idea of the level of fraud, abuse, and waste that we have in the government, which means tremendous change can occur. The Pentagon, I forgot to mention this, over $800 billion it cannot account for. That's almost $1 trillion, folks, and has failed seven audits in a row. Of course, the Afghanistan withdrawal, we left over $80 billion of military equipment, including 600,000 rifles, 30 million rounds of ammunition, over 200 aircraft, and over 75,000 vehicles for the Taliban. But not only did we leave them over $80 billion in equipment, did you know that since the United States has pulled out of Afghanistan, we have sent them $48 billion in quote-unquote aid, foreign aid? Now, the politicians will try to tell you it's for foreign aid. The reality is much of that is money laundered back to many of those same politicians. In fact, I was thinking about this the other day. Do you remember when Trump, first term, he was trying to build the wall and he wanted $5 billion to build the wall? And Congress told him, led by Nancy Pelosi, that that was just too much. Yet last year, the federal government admits to spending over $150 billion on food, clothing, and housing for illegal aliens. So $5 billion for a wall was too much, but $150 billion in 1 year is not too much for illegals. Now, did all that money, here's the thing you need to understand, and even I don't think Trump understood this in the first term, and I believe he does now. He was thinking like a businessman or like most logical, normal people would think. Hey, $5 billion for a wall, that's a bargain, reality, and we'll cut down immigration. The problem is that's not how Washington works or how many of these elected officials or bureaucrats work. I believe that if Trump said, hey, I want $150 billion for the wall, and most of that, or say half of that, will go back into your coffers in political donations, things like that, Congress probably would have been far more likely to approve it. The problem was there was no benefit to these people in Congress or the bureaucrats for building a $5 billion wall. See, I don't think there's a lot of ideology that drives these people. Certainly there's some up there that their ideology is different. I think a lot of it just is strictly plain and simple money. It's been well known that Ukraine's been one of the most corrupt countries in the world. If you send it overseas, it gets turned to cash. It becomes untraceable. It can be returned back. But now do you understand why these things occur and how they, this is the real world. It's a money laundering racket. It's a fraud and money laundering operation, folks. And that in and of itself is why I'm excited about the future. Because if Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency is able to reduce much of this waste and fraud, the sheer amount of money there that's available that can get back to these people just attracts those type of people that are going to sponge off of or take advantage of that system. When the money dries up, they're going to go elsewhere and do other things. And that in itself will improve the government and the representatives that we have. And you can pretty easily see who it is. If you just look at any, you know, overseas funding, Ukrainian funding, whatever, you pick it, foreign aid, whatever, nearly all the Democrats consistently vote for it, about half the Republicans, the rhinos. So you've got about half who are fiscally responsible and trying to do the right thing, trying to represent their people. That number is increasing. Some of the rhinos have been replaced. That's good. It's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take several election cycles, likely. But at least we're moving in the right direction. That's where I'm optimistic. But please understand, this is probably going to take some time. As I stated earlier, economically, we've got some volatility ahead of us. The government's still right now spending way more. They're throwing money out the door as fast as they can before Trump takes office. We're going to pay the price for that. There's going to be some volatility as a result. You've got to be able to weather the storm before we get to the better times, to the clearer sailing. Take the winnings off the table. Protect yourself. Reduce your risk. Create a tax-free bucket of money that's insured, guaranteed, highly liquid, so that when the correction occurs and then things are on the cheap, you can reinvest or re-engage. And that's where you truly build wealth. As always, stay tuned to the Your Personal Bank Show. And as long as it's on our money, in God we trust.
Contact Ference at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. That's 866-268-4422. This show is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information. The presenter and guests of this program do not engage in legal, accounting, or tax advice.
I'm Ference Toth, host of the Your Personal Bank Show. I'm excited to announce a special event with John Burley, Saturday, January 18th in Phoenix, sponsored by Money Radio. John, what will you be sharing?
We're going to be covering from my book, Money Secrets of the Rich, the 7 levels of investors, so you can clearly identify where you're at and what you need to do to move forward with your money. We're also going to cover the 7 money steps to the rich, including the automatic money system. And then we're going to finish up with how to safely and securely make far more money than the stock market in real estate.
And I will share how to grow your money insured, guaranteed, tax-free, and highly liquid, and how to gain positive cash flow on your money. Your personal bank can enhance personal finances, business investments, and real estate investing.
So don't miss this unique opportunity to not only learn, but meet other successful investors.
Register at yourpersonalbank.com. Join us January 18th. Space is extremely limited. And tune in to the Your Personal Bank Show.
A gentle breeze blows across your face as you take a refreshing sip of water, appreciating the stillness of another morning fishing on the lake. The distant gurgle of a stream reminds you of days spent playing in the creek, the cool, clear water rushing between your toes. You love this time with nature, the feeling of putting everything on hold to connect with the world around you. Now, imagine it's all gone. No fish, no lake, no water. One of life's most vital resources, irreplaceably depleted. Time is running out to protect freshwater, and without our love, it can and will disappear. It's our choice. Love it or lose it. Help protect our freshwater. Visit World Wildlife Fund at wwf.org/love.
Standing at the edge of a rocky shore, you breathe in the cool, salty air, watching the sun disappear on the horizon. Across the globe, someone begins their day along a sandy beach, listening to the rhythm of the crashing waves. You each envision a world beneath the water, vibrant life in every imaginable form. Now, imagine it's all gone. What was once a place of wonder and beauty is now a dull, lifeless wasteland. Food, jobs, medicine, all gifts from the ocean, all gone. Time is running out to protect our oceans. And without our love, everything the oceans provide can and will disappear. It's our choice. Love it or lose it. Help protect our oceans. Visit World Wildlife Fund at wwf.org/love.